Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we try and bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from around the NFL.
We'll roll through every team's top remaining needs, Matt Ryan backs his offensive line, and an early look at the 2013 draft.
It's all just ahead on this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor here. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, our senior editor, Eric Edholm, and we are going to be checking in with the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial staff this week as we try and bring you up to date on where your favorite NFL team is. The draft is behind us. There's still time in free agency, but all the major signings have been made. What does each team still need to get done as they try and get ready now for mini camps and eventually the opening of training camps at the end of July? We're going to start the AFC East with associate editor Kevin Fishbane. And Kevin, before we even get to that, I'm fascinated by this Patriots signing of Joseph Addai. It's typical New England Patriots. They probably got him for half what Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is getting paid, and he's probably a better running back.
Yeah, and it's just another Patriots thing, kicking the tires on a veteran that nobody else wanted to go get. It worked last year with Andre Carter, and you know, he kind of might make Kevin Falk going to be probably tough for Falk to make the team because Addai is going to be able to do a lot of the things that Falk can do. And the other thing I think that they're going to use Joseph Addai for is the goal line. He's not your prototypical goal line back, but he obviously has plenty of experience near the red near the end zone. And Stephen Ridley, the rookie, had some fumbling issues last year, so I think they're going to want to use him in a lot of ways.
Kevin, the Buffalo Bills have been extremely busy this offseason. A couple of major signings in free agency. Mario Williams, Mark Anderson should improve the pass rush. Did some work in the draft as well. But the latest thing they've done is taken care of Fred Jackson, the running back. Now, typically you don't see these kind of deals happen for 31-year-old guys. But talk us through some of the details and what they expect out of Jackson and C.J. Spiller this season.
Yeah, well, it's a two-year extension, so he was going to be a free agent at the end of this season. And this was in some ways symbolic because Fred Jackson is very well-liked in that locker room, very well-liked in Buffalo. He is kind of a symbol of that entire franchise, getting these guys. He plays a chip on his shoulder, getting these guys from out of nowhere. Obviously, everyone knows Jackson's story. But on the field, I mean, he was one of the best running backs in the league before he went down last year. You pair him with C.J. Spiller, it's going to be one of the best backfields in the NFL. And he is 31, but he hasn't logged a lot of years in the NFL. So, you know, I think they can take that risk. And again, it's just the Bills showing their players, if you play well, if you do it the right way, we're going to continue to reward you, which is something Buffalo hasn't done in the past.
Well, Kev, you know, it's a very interesting story because I really admire the Buffalo Bills taking care of this veteran with a year left. He came in as a free agent at close to a minimum deal. He hasn't made much money. He's 31 years old. The flip side of it, though, is that there's apparently only about $3 million guaranteed dollars in this deal, and that's still not much for a guy who has meant as much to the team as the Buffalo Bills. So obviously he's confident he's going to play at least 1 or 2 years of that deal, and that's how he's going to make some of the money that a player of his stature should have made at this point in his career. Now let me ask you very quickly, as you look around that division, take your four teams, what is still the greatest remaining need of each of these clubs with free agency still available to them?
Well, I think the Jets' big need is still safety. Even though they drafted two guys late, neither of those players are expected to factor in a start. Laron Landry's got the injury issues. Eric Smith struggled a lot last year covering those tight ends. They got to hope that Laron Landry's going to be the answer. For the Bills, I still think they could get another quarterback. You know, I know they tried out Vince Young. I was surprised they didn't draft a quarterback, at least to have back there. Fitzpatrick was great at the beginning of last season, fell apart at the end, just to have some insurance or even a guy to develop as the future after Fitzpatrick. Looking at the Patriots, you know, they really did a lot in free agency to fill most of their needs. Kind of like the Jets, so I still think safety is a glaring need for them. They get Steve Gregory in free agency and Tavon Wilson, but big question marks on both those guys, and that secondary was just woeful last year. The Dolphins, I mean, their top wide receivers right now are Brian Hartline and Devon Bess, and I like both of them, and I think Hartline could be in line for a big year, but they have nobody after those two players. There's a lot of young, unproven guys. I think it was very surprising to see them not draft. They drafted receivers in the sixth round, but to have them in Joe Philbin's offense not go after receivers is a little surprising.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. We're now going to go to the AFC West. Eli Cabron handles that division for us. And Eli, interesting story out there. I guess it's sort of something we've seen coming here. GM Brian Zanders, the former GM, was officially let go by the club. Some people speculating this move was months in the making. What can you tell us about the relationship between Zanders, who was there for the McDaniels era, and obviously now John Elway has sort of taken over a presidential type of role? What happened in the aftermath of that news?
Yeah, Eric, the Broncos front office has been going through a major change over the past 15 months or so since John Elway came aboard as the executive vice president of football operations. And Brian Zanders' role just kept getting smaller and smaller. And this offseason, with the recruitment of Peyton Manning and some other free agent signings, he just really didn't have a major role. And then John Elway also took charge in kind of orchestrating the Broncos' draft plan. So Brian Zanders was really a general manager with nothing to manage. He just didn't really do much there. And both sides kind of felt it was best if they went their separate ways. Zanders has had plenty of experience in the NFL. He's still a young guy. He'll probably catch on somewhere else. Highly respected, but in that Denver front office, he just really didn't have a role.
But I would think the key now, Eli, is who is going to be John Elway's director of player personnel, you know, assistant GM, whatever you want to call it. He's got to have somebody because Elway should not be the chief scout.
Yeah, Matt Russell is their director of player personnel, and he took a lot of instinctive in pushing the draft as well. And then Mike Sullivan, a former agent, is their cap guy, and he's done a pretty good job of fitting people in on that Broncos roster. So John Elway has some guys that he trusts, and then John Fox, the head coach, has also taken a bigger role in player personnel and shaping the roster. So there's people there for Elway to turn to. It just won't be Brian Zanders anymore.
Let me ask you very quickly about your clubs. Now, the San Diego Chargers, clearly with the loss of Mike Tolbert to Carolina, they need a complement to Ryan Matthews. They may need more. It's running back for them. Chiefs are in pretty good shape, probably some depth at linebacker. But as you look at the Broncos and the Raiders, what are the greatest needs they still have to take care of?
Yeah, both teams, I think, could address the secondary. The Broncos, with the loss of Brian Dawkins, probably could use another safety there. Promoting Quinton Carter to the starting lineup this year, but he's still unproven. They signed Mike Adams, but they could use another guy deep. And then for the Raiders, it would be cornerback. They lost both of their starters from last year, Chris Johnson and Stanford Rout. Both were released. They added some veterans, but they could still use more talent on the outside. They were just torched repeatedly last year in the passing game. So the secondary for both the Broncos and the Raiders could be upgraded.
Let's not forget the Raiders let Nnamdi Asamoah leave two seasons ago, too. So certainly cornerback a focus there. Thank you very much, guys. We've got to take a very brief commercial break here. But after that, we'll be back and take a look at the AFC North with senior editor Mike Wilknight. We're back with more Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish. Eric Edholm is alongside in studio. We are visiting with the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial department as we take you around the NFL. And we now welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening. Wilkie covers the AFC North and the Detroit Lions for us. We've got the NFC North split up among some of our veteran guys because we are one editor short of having everybody have their own division. So, but Wilkie, before we get to the Lions and even the greatest needs remaining of each of your five clubs, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the Cleveland Browns quarterback situation. They can't seem to get their story straight. You know, one day they still want Colt McCoy to compete for the job. Next day maybe he's going to be traded. I think they've now backed off the trade thing. They say Colt McCoy is here to compete. They're not going to hand the job to Brandon Whedon. And then they even bring up the name of Seneca Wallace. So, you know, what is your understanding of where they're really at with their quarterback?
Well, I mean, they clearly made it a point that was not to be missed, that Brandon Whedon being selected 22nd overall, they want him to be the guy. I mean, actions, I think, in this case are pretty clear. Now, that said, some lip service is being said to the fact that he has to earn this job. Now, Mike Holmgren has said that, went on a number of media outlets, ESPN included, to kind of say those type of things. And again, you can understand that. But at the end of the day, Brandon Whedon is someone that they liked enough to take in round one. You would have to keep him as the favorite to win that job. But I think the one interesting thing, Hub and Eric, is that, look, this is an offense that can be difficult to pick up. And this is a guy, it's his first year in the scheme. Let's see how this all plays out with regards to him seizing the job like surely they would like him to.
Mike, the big story in Baltimore continues to be Terrell Suggs. He did have surgery on his Achilles tendon this past Tuesday. Team GM Ozzie Newsome issued a statement, called the surgery successful. Suggs is telling the papers, Baltimore Sun specifically, I believe, that he still expects to play this year. He's calling it 4 to 6 months. But here's the key to this thing, folks. Witness Ryan Howard of the Philadelphia Phillies and his struggles to get back. And he's trying to play baseball, not football. No offense, baseball players. It is unlikely if he had a completely torn Achilles and they did the reconstructive surgery that Suggs plays this year. But what we never did find out Was it completely torn? What type of surgery was it? Do we have any more information on how realistic Suggs' wishes are?
Well, Suggs has told the Baltimore Sun it's a partial tear. Now, again, and his prognosis is what he has said, kind of that 4 to 6 months or thereabouts. He's very hopeful about returning. Obviously, again, this is a serious injury, even if it's partial or full. So I think when it comes down to it, we can probably say with confidence that the beginning of the season is something where Terrell Suggs is probably unlikely to be available. But I think it comes down to whether or not he's a guy that's a pup list possibility or whether or not he's someone that, you know, is out for, you know, a more extended stretch or even the entire season. I think that's the one thing we just don't know just yet.
All right, well, let's keep it with those two clubs. We'll get to all four of your team's needs. But as far as the Browns, they did a lot of work on offense in the draft, and you've got this Suggs situation. Does that force the Ravens maybe to go outside the team for help? What are the predominant needs for these two teams?
Well, I think for Baltimore, adding another pass rusher wouldn't be the worst thing. This is a defense that I think was better getting the quarterback last year, but Terrell Suggs was really the only guy who I think could, you know, was really a playmaker of the highest order in that regard. You could always add more pass rushing help. He's someone I think, you know, clearly would be tough to replace. They're going to look at Courtney Upshaw, Paul Kruger among the guys to kind of pick up the slack there as a rusher. From Cleveland's standpoint, they just need more playmakers on offense. They only drafted one receiver, Travis Benjamin, in round 4. They still have to get better on that side of the ball. I know Trent Richardson's a big help, but I mean, you know, this is an offense that, aside from Richardson, it doesn't really scare anybody, and I think they still need to get better in that regard.
And what about the Steelers and Bengals? What can they hope to accomplish between now and training camp?
You know, I think for Pittsburgh, it's a depth issue. I think they need to get a little bit better, you know, on defense from a depth perspective. You know, they can always add a couple more veterans. You know, they had to kind of play it close to the vest with Mike Wallace being unsigned. And, you know, I think they cut some guys. You know, the cap was an issue. And maybe, you know, maybe they get into the shopping phase a little bit more here as the offseason goes on, add a couple more veterans that can help them. You know, with regards to Cincinnati, to me, I don't know what they're going to do with that number 2 wide receiver spot. I mean, they drafted Mohamed Sanu. They drafted Marvin Jones. I think both are capable prospects. But again, I think there's some uncertainty there. I think that's a position that really, you know, I don't think we've kind of seen everything that's going to play out there just yet.
Mike, I'm going to give you 10 to 15 seconds. I'm going to start by putting words in your mouth. I got to believe the Detroit Lions need more help in the secondary, don't they?
Right. I mean, they do. I mean, they drafted 3 corners, but this is really a team. I think it's going to come down to whether or not they can stop the pass and maybe do a little bit better versus the run. I mean, they gave up a few too many big plays last season.
All right, Wilkie, we'll be talking to you pretty much every week as we get closer to the season. Right now, we have to take a quick commercial break, and then it's Arthur Arkush with the AFC South. Welcome back, everybody. As we roll on with Pro Football Weekly, we now welcome in Associate Editor Arthur Arkush, and Arthur covers the AFC South for us. And Arthur, let's start in Jacksonville, where there appears to be a whole new atmosphere. Remember, new head coaches, and Mike Mularkey's not a first-time head coach, but he's new with the Jaguars. New head coaches get 2 extra mini-camps, in addition to the one that every team gets, and they had their first this past week, and it seems like there's optimism in the air for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I think so, and it's important to point out that I think there's probably optimism in all 32 NFL cities right now, because it's May, and there's lots of things that are positive or should be viewed as positive in every city. But the Mike Mularkey tenure in Jacksonville has gotten off to a solid start. Our spies down there are reporting that everything has been extremely positive. Some of the things that used to maybe slip through the cracks, we'll call it, in the Jack Del Rio tenure, Mike Mularkey is really paying extra attention to. The attention to detail has been outstanding, and so far the reports are positive. We'll see what he can do with Blaine Gabbert.
Like Mularkey in Jacksonville, Chuck Pagano is in fact a first-time head coach and a new head coach for the Colts, so they get extra workouts as well. And they had Andrew Luck in town last week. How'd that all go?
Very well. Our sources in Indianapolis were calling Andrew Luck Peyton Manning Jr., so that didn't take long. By all accounts, he is a very impressive young man. Of course, we've known that for quite some time already, but what we're hearing is that he handled the media circus very well on the field. He looked every bit the part. Of course, this is, again, May, and they're not in pads yet, but had a kind of a natural leadership role with his teammates, and said that while he won't be able to join his teammates again until after he graduates, because Stanford is on that funky system at school, he'll be making sure that he gets together with some of his receivers while he's out in California. Austin Colley's right in Sacramento, and of course Kobe Fleener's out there as well, so he's going to be getting to work and not wasting any time.
Well, let's stay with those two teams for a second, Arthur, and Peyton Manning Jr., a.k.a. Andrew Luck, got some nice help in the draft. A lot of offensive players. They took one on defense, which shocked a lot of people. Josh Chapman and Keaton may not be ready for the start of the season. I'm guessing their needs kind of lie on that side of the ball.
Yeah, there's no question. I think you could kind of throw a dart at any position on defense, and certainly they could use upgrades. But I think one position in particular is cornerback. I think people were very surprised to see them not address that position after the absolute train wreck that occurred last season there. Jerod Power is very solid on one side, but on the other side there are major question marks. Second-year player Chris Rucker and Kevin Thomas, a former third-round pick, are the front runners to win that job. But we wouldn't be at all surprised to see Indianapolis kind of picking up the scraps of whatever other teams, whatever other veterans may be cut later in training camp. So that's one position to keep an eye out on.
Smart, because they've got that top waivers position. They're going to use that quite a bit, I would think. And the Jaguars, what do you think they might do between now and camp?
I think the Jaguars could always use offensive line help. Blaine Gabbert was not a very confident pocket passer last year, and the Jaguars have a lot invested in Eben Britton, their former second rounder, who's been very unreliable from a durability standpoint the past couple years. So while they have him penciled in on right tackle, I think it would behoove them to maybe go out and get some additional help. And then on the inside, Will Rackley, showed promise as a rookie, but he looked lost at times as well. So they could use some guys to push him there on the interior.
You know, Arthur, I think people forget easily for some reason that the Titans tied for the fourth best record in the AFC last year. They lost a wild card spot in a tiebreaker at 9-7. Still, they have some needs. And then, of course, the Texans, the division champs. What do these two teams have to get done?
Well, first with the Titans, of course, the big loss for them this offseason was Cortland Finnegan. And while they have the guys in-house that they think can fill that void, Altron Werner is a promising young kid who's going to come into the starting lineup, they could certainly still use some help. I wouldn't be surprised to see them looking at some veterans. You'll remember Cortland Finnegan played primarily in the slot last season, so they could still use some help to kind of bolster the competition there for that third cornerback job. And then they're also still looking for help on the interior. Mike Munchak, Bruce Matthews know a thing or two about offensive line play, but they did decide to forego, you know, addressing that position in the draft and free agency, so we still wouldn't be surprised to see them bring in a center. Jeff Fain is a name to keep an eye on.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. Eric, I want to switch over to the NFC right now, and the Minnesota Vikings appear pretty close to a stadium, but it's not done yet.
Yeah, all signs point towards that. On Thursday, we're still taking votes and stuff, but I mean, everything looks like it's going forward, and there's still some questions here, you know, things that haven't been sorted out yet. Where are the Vikings going to play when the Metrodome lease runs out? There's got to be a stadium in between the two. Maybe they can get an extension there, go back to TCF Bank Stadium at the University of Minnesota. Is there a retractable roof? You know, what's the capacity of the stadium? What's it going to look like? Still some things to work out, but there's a lot of positive vibe up in Minnesota when a week ago it didn't look so great.
Jerry Jones spent a fortune on Brandon Carr, free agency, to be one of his starting cornerbacks. He then gave up a fortune with a second-round pick and a first-round pick to draft Morris Claiborne so he could pay him a fortune as a first-round pick, the sixth pick in the draft, to become the other starting cornerback. Where does that leave recent and now former first-round draft choice Mike Jenkins?
And former Pro Bowler, a guy who made the team in 2009, took a step back last season and the year before that. So, you know, there's questions about whether he is really as good as his draft value would suggest or draft position suggests he is. So, you know, they floated him out there during the draft, asked probably for a first-round pick, very high price, nobody bit. So they're going to keep him, and they're going to say, you know, they keep saying that he's a big part of the franchise. They've got big plans for him and all this stuff. Look, right now you'd have to say he's the third safety, and maybe not a nickel safety, or a cornerback, excuse me. So, you know, it just remains to be seen. I think if somebody goes down in training camp, he'll step up. Otherwise, another team may come calling.
Yeah, call Philly and ask him how it worked out having three-star cornerbacks.
With a lot of money.
Very quickly, I got to ask you, as we are taping our show at the end of this week, the arbitration hearings are going on for the Redskins and the Cowboys about their salary cap penalties. I'm hearing no hope, but are you anything different?
I think similar. Yeah, I don't think there's much hope there, and you know, they might as well float out there, and they've got the lawyers and the legal fees to spend, so they want to at least shoot a dart against the wall, I guess.
All right, folks, we're going to check on the greatest needs of Eric's East teams, as well as welcome in Dan Parr, talk about the NFC South in just a moment. Yes, we are, and we left you a minute or two ago talking about the NFC East and the Minnesota Vikings. So, Eric, we'll start with the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants. Greatest needs still to take care of before they get to training camp.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys actually have quite a few things they could actually check off their list. I mean, a punter, you know, some competition there at the position. Another running back, you know, Felix Jones, DeMarco Murray, those guys have had injury histories. I could see a wide receiver just because right now there's no obvious candidate for that number three spot. You know, and maybe a return specialist. I would say that would probably be the next in line. The Giants, I don't expect them to do anything but minor tinkering from here on. I mean, maybe a defensive lineman if something happens with OCU and Yora. Maybe another safety. You could see him bring back Deion Grant, perhaps. Somebody to help the special teams out as well. But they're pretty much done shopping, I think.
I think a lot of people thought the Vikings might draft a running back a little bit higher than they did. I'm sure they have other concerns as well. And in Washington, you know, granted they were limited in picks, but even in free agency, they haven't done much about that awful secondary.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in some guys, you know, just a bunch of names. I mean, I don't know if they're still good players. Tanner Jackson could win a spot. I don't know if Brandon Merriweather has anything left. So, you know, safety could remain a concern. I don't think they're going to bring in much on the offensive line with three draft picks. I kind of thought they might address that position. A nickel corner would be nice. You know, Philly actually likes Chris Polk, this undrafted free agent kid, and they've got him and Bryce Brown, a seventh rounder. Could that be LeSean McCoy's backup? That's kind of frightening. Maybe one more veteran enters the picture.
I don't want to be too hard on the Vikings because I love Rick Spielth and Les Frazier. They're two dear friends, you know, and great guys. But obviously this is a team that has more than one need.
Yeah, and I think with Ryan Longwell gone, I mean, could they bring in a streak kicker, a second, third, fourth year guy to compete with Blair Walsh, the rookie? Yeah, possibly. Absolutely. They'd probably be saving money there. Safety, they're probably going to start two rookies, you know, Robert Blanton, Harrison Smith. I mean, one was a corner at Notre Dame. The other was the starting safety. So I could see another veteran face there. And then running back, they just cut Caleb King. They've got the Adrian Peterson worries. So those could be three positions to keep an eye on.
All right, Eric, let's bring in Associate Editor Dan Parr. And Dan's got the NFC South as well as the Chicago Bears. And I want to start with the Falcons, Dan. Matt Ryan's a really good quarterback. He's a winning quarterback, but he's got to win a playoff game. He's got to get back to the playoffs, and then he's got to win one. And he had offensive line problems last year. But I guess in talking to you earlier this week, he seems pretty happy with his offensive line.
His quote was that he'd take the guys he has any day of the week. Now, you say he is a professional. He is a good teammate. He's not going to speak poorly about his guys that are protecting him. He knows better than to do that. But is the confidence well placed? Does he have a reason to? They have a new offensive line coach in Pat Hiller. They're putting a lot of confidence in a guy who's coached at Fresno State as a head coach, has some NFL experience as an assistant. They're counting on him to get more out of this group than his predecessor was able to do, Paul Boudreau, last season. Left tackle's been a turnstile for them. It's been an issue. Sam Baker's going to get another shot there. Can he be the blindside protector for Matt Ryan? It's a big question mark. Can he stay healthy even?
Well, and now you look at the Carolina Panthers, another club that I think surprised a lot of people in the draft. Almost everybody had defensive tackle as their greatest need. Not only did they leave the very best DTs on the board in the first round, they didn't draft one at all.
And they hadn't really done anything about the position in free agency going in, which really did feed speculation that, okay, they were looking at the draft, where this is where they would shore up that area. You know, they're moving forward with a couple of young guys at three techniques, Sion Fua, Terrell McClain, and they're planning on, you know, having Ron Edwards back, who missed all of last season healthy. They think they have enough to get by there, but that was the surprise for anyone who's been following the Panthers in the past couple of years. They did not, with Fletcher Cox still on the board there when they picked. They went linebacker instead. Luke Kuechly got a really good player, but they still have some real concerns, I think, up front at on the interior of the defensive line.
What was Ron Rivera's quote on that? Everybody just needs to calm down, I think is what he described. All right, so if we know defensive tackle is not a need for the Panthers, at least in their eyes, talk about what they might be looking for as we get closer to training camp, and also the Falcons as well, besides that offensive line that you mentioned.
Well, in the case of the Panthers, we knew that they looked at Jacoby Jones, a wide receiver who was a free agent, who ended up in it. Signing with the Ravens, but it was a guy that the Panthers did have some interest in, just weren't willing to pay the price that the Ravens did. So they obviously view receiver as a place where they could improve, and defensive tackle, you still would like to see them add to the mix, but they aren't hitting the padding button there. As far as the Falcons go, offensive line help still a need. I think a veteran safety to add depth to that position would really help them. They lost some guys there, replaced them some with a rookie, and I think that they still have a need there. Need defensive tackle depth, still think they need more there too.
Well, Dan, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were noisier in free agency than anybody in the league, and then they got into the draft and had the best player available at their greatest area of need just fall to him in Mark Barron. So they've taken care of the safety position. What else do you expect them to address?
You know, how about I actually think they could do more at safety, because while Mark Barron fills a huge void, you still have Cody Grimm as your top free safety, a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy for a full season yet in his young career. So I still think they should add more at that spot. Right tackle, I think you should add some competition for Jeremy Trueblood. He really is just a serviceable guy.
All right, Dan, 30 seconds. I'm going to ask you a trick question. Is the New Orleans Saints' greatest need to get a deal done with Drew Brees for PR purposes? Because, quite frankly, they can franchise him for a while. Now, that's not really the issue. Or are there other positions that they have to address?
Well, certainly getting a deal done with Brees would be huge, and I think it's going to be get done eventually. But before we get to the July 16th deadline where they could not agree on a multi-year deal before the season started. But in terms of other spots they could look, defensive line, Will Smith's been hit with a 4-game suspension to start the season. Turk McBride and Junior Gallette do it for you? I don't know. I think you could use more at defensive end going into the season to get you through that first quarter of the way when you don't have Will Smith.
All right, Dan, hang with us for just a second. I want to talk to you about the Chicago Bears, but I've got to take a very quick commercial break. We'll have more with Dan Parr. And Dan Arkish will join us to get us the NFC West as well. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. I'm Hub Arkish. My co-host Eric Edholm is alongside. We're visiting with all of the Pro Football Weekly editors, and we were talking to Associate Editor Dan Parr just before the break. We wrapped up the NFC South, but we do the NFC North by committee, and Dan has the Chicago Bears. And Dan, probably not a more active team in the league in terms of filling a number of needs via both free agency and the draft, but coming out of it, what would they still probably benefit from getting done in free agency?
Well, the one spot that they not touch in the draft that everyone had pretty high on their list of needs was offensive line, offensive tackle in particular. Now, there's no franchise left tackles out there waiting for them in free agency, but that's not what they need. They need someone who would be better than Jamarcus Webb, who has not assured anyone that he is going to be the long-term solution at that position just yet. And he's a seventh-round pick. The question is now, do you go out and get a guy like Marcus McNeil, a guy who's got health issues? That's the one everyone wants to talk about. Not sure he's the answer. He's had injuries. There's no solution. I don't think an easy one out there for them right now. But offensive line and on the interior, the defensive line, unless you move Israel Adonijé inside, which is something that will make a lot of sense, but that's not something they've said they're going to do quite yet. That's another spot where they could look.
It is interesting, Dan, because for all they've done, and they are vastly improved, they're still a team without a true starting three technique, the most important position in that defense, and they signed Calvin Hayden, Jonathan Wilhite. They drafted a couple corners, but Peanut Tillman is still the only starting caliber cornerback on that team. So work to do for the Bears. We'll keep an eye on them. Thank you very much. As we welcome in executive editor Dan Arkish, and Dan, the Seattle Seahawks, they're probably the most confusing team in the NFL when it comes to their linebacker position. They bring in Barrett Rood, who is a very functional run stuffer in the middle. They're hoping that he's recovered from a variety of injuries. But then they go use the 15th pick in the draft for a one-trick pony in Bruce Irvin, who I don't know if they're going to line him up as an outside rush backer or as a defensive end, but he's a guy who can only be on the field in pass rushing situations. So where are they really at the linebacker position?
Well, it definitely appears that Wagner is a guy who is going to at least initially step right into that middle linebacker role that David Hawthorne filled so adequately. The leading tackler each of the last three seasons. Wagner was also a very productive tackler at Utah State, and I think eventually Barrett Rood, who's still having some health problems, he had assorted injuries last year with the Titans. But once he gets healthy, I think that middle linebacker position becomes kind of a timeshare. And then Wagner and also KJ Wright both have the ability to move to other spots, and I think they like that versatility. But they are, that said, still a little bit thin at that linebacker spot. But they like Wagner a lot, and Leroy Hill had kind of a renaissance year last year, so they're not in the worst shape there.
Dan, by all indications, the Arizona Cardinals had a pretty interesting draft. They they got a good receiver in Michael Floyd. They drafted a quarterback who could factor in, but might their fourth round pick actually be starting as a rookie?
That could end up being the best pick. Eric, certainly from a need standpoint, offensive line was what they needed, and it certainly seems like Bobby Massey, the fourth round rookie, has an excellent shot at becoming the Cardinals' new starting right tackle. He held his own in the very tough SEC. He's got great size. They like him a lot. They just kind of figured he would be there, and they think that he's got a chip in his shoulder because he was drafted so low, and they think he might come through.
All right, Dan, let's stay with those two teams then. I think you said the Seahawks may be some issues, but fairly comfortable at linebacker. What is the greatest remaining needs for these two teams, the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals?
You know, I think the Seahawks are actually in pretty good shape. I can't think of any particular needs there. Certainly for the Cardinals, I think they would like to still get a little bit more help in the pass rush. So some outside linebacker help is something that they could use. One guy who could help along those lines is Clark Hagans, who remains unsigned. He's a veteran, and he's really not going to give you too much pass rush. So, I think a little more pressure – on the edges could help them a little bit.
And then we've got the bookends of the division, if you will, a team in the Niners that some people think is Super Bowl worthy, may not have very many needs at all. And then you've got the Rams, years away from competing, it appears, with so many things to fill. Talk about what those teams might be able to do before camp.
Yeah, you're talking about polar opposites here. I mean, starting with the Niners, really kind of going into the draft, there was only one glaring need, and that was at that right guard spot vacated by Adam Snyder. They think that maybe Joe Looney, their fourth-round pick, might be the answer there. He's going to compete with a lot of guys that are on the roster currently, some younger guys like Daniel Kilgore and Mike Pearson and Alex Boone. And so, you know, they were in really good shape as far as depth and could afford to be a little bit bolder. Now, the Rams, on the other hand, they have holes everywhere. We still don't know who their left guard is going to be on offense, who their weak side linebacker is going to be on defense. It appears they're going to be willing to go with both rookies at the punter and place kicker, and maybe even with the returners.
Wow.
There's a school of thought that it's that weak side linebacker. They're probably going to look at the spoils as the summer wears on, and the weak side guy might not be on the team yet.
Dan, very quickly, if you can, to wrap up the NFC North, the Packers used their first three picks on two pass rushers and a cornerback, clearly addressing their greatest needs. What's left? Is it running back? Is it center? Is it something else?
You know what, Hub? I think it's probably offensive line. I think the running back, even if Ryan Grant, it really looks like he's not coming back. They like the young guys, Alex Green and Brandon Sane, but without Clifton, Marshall Newhouse, they don't know exactly if he's the guy. So I think a little more depth at tackle and center, for that matter, is something that they could use, because Jeff Saturday is 37 years old.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. Guys, we've got one more treat for you. We've got you around the NFL now, but next up, how about an early look at the 2013 NFL draft with Nolan Naraki coming up. All right, guys, we know what you're all thinking. The NFL college draft just wrapped up a couple weeks ago, but really, is it ever too soon to start getting ready for the next one? The 2013 NFL college draft will be in our sights in about 5-6 months, but as teams wrap up spring practice, spring games, get ready to take the summer off, go back to working out, we've already got an advanced list to look at. We bring in our senior editor, Nolan Naraki, also the author of our NFL Draft Preview magazine, NFL Draft Preview book. And, Nolan, I know you're working on these kids year-round, and there's a couple names here that everybody's heard, and then there's some names that'll be surprises to folks. So let's give our listeners a little idea of who they might want to watch as college football unfolds in the coming season. If it all started today, who would be your top two or three players?
I think it starts with Matt Barkley from USC. He decided to stay in school. Surprisingly, I think he would have been a top 10 pick given the premium on quarterbacks. You know, he's a 4-year starter, 3-time team captain, has outstanding touch, accuracy, strong command of a pro-style offense. I think he's going to be the favorite to be the top pick next year. And then there's some strong quarterbacks in this coming senior class. You look at E.J. Manuel from Florida State. I think he has all the physical tools. Same story with Logan Thomas from Virginia Tech. He's an underclassman, but he's very talented. If it comes together for him this year, I think he'll be another potential first-round type of talent. And then you got Arkansas's Tyler Wilson and Landry Jones from Oklahoma. So you have a handful of quarterbacks that I think could make this another interesting quarterback class.
A quick follow-up on Logan Thomas. A lot of people see him, the size, the athleticism, they think of one guy. They think of Cam Newton. So the question is, does Thomas have the type of skills, and can he make enough of a jump this season to possibly knock Barkley out of that number one spot?
Well, he's already been working with George Whitfield, the quarterback coach, and I think he has his eyes on the prize. We'll see if he can put it together. He was erratic last season, 2-1 TD to interception ratio, and I think he's got to really settle down in the pocket this year, but the athletic ability clearly is there.
Nolan, wide receiver has been a premium position in recent seasons. Running back has slipped a little bit. Who are the wide receivers and running backs you've got your eye on?
Well, to me, the top running back is going to be Le'Veon Bell. He's the reason that Edwin Baker decided to declare early. He has outstanding size at 6'2", 235, and he's just a true workhorse, great instincts. I think he'll be a very good NFL player if he should come early. The other running backs that really stand out to me are Monte Ball from Wisconsin, who I thought was going to declare this year, Marcus Lattimore coming off an ACL injury from South Carolina, and then Niall Davis also coming off an ACL, and a guy who's been injury-prone throughout college but has very interesting interesting tools. At receiver, to me, it's very clear who the top receiver is in the coming year. Ever since Sammy Watkins arrived on campus at Clemson, he's been a true star, one of the players similar to Adrian Peterson and Calvin Johnson who comes on the campus, and you just know you're dealing with a star. I think he's even though he's not draft eligible this season, I think he's clearly the top receiver.
Nolan, tight end was kind of a disappointing position this year, and yet there's a guy at Notre Dame who might follow the sort of the recent tradition, guys like Kyle Rudolph, John Carlson. Is Tyler Eifert even better than those guys, and how strong is the rest of the class?
I think he's even more athletic than those two and will make a more immediate impact as a pass catcher. But, you know, he's not as strong in the blocking game, and, you know, he's really going to have to make his mark as a receiver.
It will also surprise no one that one of the top O-line prospects is in the Big Ten. It's given us Joe Thomas and Jake Long in recent years, and now just this year. Of course, you had Riley Reiff and Michael Adams. Kid at Michigan, at least going in, look like the top guy?
Taylor Lewan, I think, has all the physical tools. I think he's got the tenacity you like on the right side, and he has enough athletic ability to play the left. So to me, he's one of the top candidates in this year's class. I like Alabama's Barrett Jones, but I think he may be moving to center this year. Has more versatility, doesn't have ideal length, and to me, those are the top two prospects at that position.
Nolan, you have a defensive end at Illinois. Now, of course, one win in the first round of this year's draft in Whitney Mercilus, but is Michael Buchanan, the 6'6", 245-pound rising senior, is he a better player than Whitney Mercilus, or at least will he be a better player when he comes out in next year's draft?
If you watched him closely last year, Buchanan created a lot of the production for Mercilus, so I think there's a chance he could wind up becoming a better pro. I really liked Barkevious Mingo from LSU. I think he's a freakish type of talent, similar to Von Miller that, you know, had he declared this year as a sophomore, third-year sophomore, you know, I would have rather have had him than Bruce Irvin. I think he had that kind of talent. I think he's another one that'll get looks in that class, maybe even as an outside linebacker. And you have a couple more, like Devin Taylor from South Carolina coming out of a strong program that has produced pass rushers, and Marcus Hunt from SMU, I think, is this year's top five technique.
All right, Nolan, unfortunately, we are out of time, but defensive tackle Quan Short at Purdue, outside linebacker Jarvis Jones from Georgia, cornerback David Amerson from North Carolina State, safety Eric Reed from LSU, just a few more defenders to keep an eye on. We've got to take one last commercial break, then we're going to get you the publisher's pen on this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
You know, Eric, I'm going to talk for just a minute or so on the story that just won't go away as much as I think many of us are starting to wish it would. The penalties for the bounty program down in New Orleans. And I am really disturbed over what happened this past week with now Green Bay Packer Anthony Hargrove. And apparently after refusing to cooperate, got suspended, decided he wanted to fight his suspension and tried to cooperate, made a statement to the NFL offices, and somehow the statement ends up out in public and leaves him hung out to dry with former teammates, current teammates, because he said, hey, I was told not to talk by the coach. The coach is calling him a liar. The situation just gets worse. And at what point is there going to be any respect for the process here? I mean, I don't think it was Hargrove who leaked that information. It certainly wasn't his agent, and it wasn't the players. I think the league office needs to find a way to shut this thing down. Make a settlement with the NFL Players Association. Get this over with. Be a little lenient with a couple of these players if you have to. We get it, and we've now all heard enough. It's time to put this story away. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks, as always, to Randy Meyer for the outstanding job he does every week, producing and engineering. Our home studio is Syndication Network. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for being there. We hope you'll be with us again next week, same time, same station, for more Pro Football Weekly.